You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
I'm Drew Leiner.
And I'm Cletus Jacobs.
And welcome to episode 291 of the Earth Station DCU. Tonight we're going to talk the Jurassic League number 1, Justice League versus the Legion of Superheroes number 3, Naomi season 2 number 3, Batman Urban Legends number 15, I Am Batman number 9, Batgirls number 6, Superman Son of Kal-El number 11, Wonder Woman number 787, The Flash season 8 episode 16, The Curious Case of Bartholomew Allen, and Superman and Lois, Season 2, Episode 12, Lies That Bind. But before we get into that, let's talk some DC news. Alright, Cletus, first up for DC news. DC is launching a new Batman Incorporated series from writer Ed Brisson and artist John Timms this October.
I'm not super familiar with the creators on this team, Drew, so I don't really have any expectations, good or bad, in that regard. But it's pretty cool. They're gonna, you know, do a series with the Batman Inc. again. I'm not shocked by that, considering we've seen, I feel like, an uptick in usage and reference to that team. So it kind of seems like this is, you know, in some way been on DC's mind. So cautiously optimistic, Drew. Like I said, I have no idea about the creators, so I don't know how to temper my expectations in that regard. But yeah, I think it's cool. I like the concept of Batman Inc., and I think there's a lot of potential to tell good stories with it.
Yeah, I'm just glad Williamson's not writing it. But but it's supposed to be spinning out of the Shadow War, so we'll see what happens.
I'm sure it probably is in some regard, Drew, but I wonder how much it, like, relevant to the Shadow War it's gonna be, though. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
I feel like that feels more of like a marketing thing. Like, well, if you love Shadow War, go read this, when it's really just like, well, it's still Batman. I don't know. I could be wrong. Maybe it's super related, but I'd be a little bit surprised.
All right. Up next for DC News. Jeremy Irvine, who has been cast to play Alan Scott in the Green Lantern television series, gives an update on the project. I am very excited. At the same time, it's been a project that's been around for some time. As far as I know, there's no start date, but when I get the call, I will pop on my green tights and be there. I think it's a very difficult time at the moment to get a project off the ground, and I know they want to do that project in a very large scale. I think getting all the stars to align on such an ambitious telling of that story is difficult, and I hope it all comes together at some point. But these things, unfortunately, take a long time, and they take a lot of different aspects to all line up. The series is also expected to feature other characters like Guy Gardner, Jessica Cruz, Simon Baz, Kilowog, and a newly created character named Bree Jarda.
I think the actor was extremely diplomatic in his answer, Drew, but I think it was a lot of dancing around the bush, which is that the show's going nowhere at the moment. I mean, I've been pretty vocal on how hesitant I am about this show. I want to like it, to be clear. Nothing would make me happier than this show being amazing. It would be a dream come true, legitimately. But I have a lot of doubts to begin with, and part of me wonders, especially with the ownership change, if there are some doubts from higher ups on this show also.
Yeah, and I have a feeling you're right. With no start date for filming or anything like that, I wonder if the project is just in a stalemate right now. It could possibly get canceled.
Well, you know, and I wonder, again, obviously we're just speculating, so we don't have, you know, the knowledge that people involved would actually have. But Drew, I do wonder if one thing potentially hurting it, if it is getting caught up in development, is how vague it's felt like the series has been. Like, I know it's about Green Lanterns, but they've always kind of been like, well, it's about a lot of different characters and we're exploring different things. And I wonder if that sort of nebulous, just it's Green Lantern question mark, I wonder if that's not defined enough to give confidence to the project. I wouldn't be shocked, Drew, especially for we know the people really in charge don't care one way or the other about these characters. They want to know bottom line, like simple stuff, right? What's the show about? And I wonder if they don't have a good answer for that.
That's very possible. I wonder if they even have a script yet. Probably not.
I would hope they've got something,
I would hope so too.
but you could be right. That's the thing. I don't know. They've been so, I feel, I mean, obviously you're going to be vague because you don't want to give the story away and stuff, but they felt like, to me, very, very vague as in regards to what the show is and what it's about, to the point where it makes it feel like they've not developed it fully. So I'm not shocked. A, I'm not shocked that the show hasn't moved forward quickly because it never really felt like they've developed it to a point where they're ready to move forward. You know, like we know they've cast certain characters and that's cool and they have ideas to use specific Green Lanterns and I like all of that, to be clear. But they've never, like, it, to me, and again, we don't know. Maybe they have a very specific idea of what the show is supposed to look like. But as far as we know, it's never really been defined beyond just like, it seems like a sort of ensemble cast vaguely about Green Lantern. That, I mean, that's, I feel like it's about as much detail as we've gotten.
Yeah, I'm sure if they pitched it as space cops, it would probably be more understandable to the execs than, trying to explain what a Green Lantern is.
Right. Well, and I think even that gives a more specific idea. If you do space cops, maybe it becomes a little possibly, this is just a possible direction you could go. I'm not saying you have to do this or that it's necessarily the best, but you could do like a almost similar, Drew, to like Lucifer, where it's like a procedural, crime of the week sort of thing. Again, they don't have to do it that way, but that would give a clear direction. What's the show about? Well, it's basically a police procedural, but in space. That's interesting. I mean, I would watch that. Again, you don't have to do it that way. There are definitely many other ways you could do the show and still do it well. But that's a defined way to do the show, right? And I don't think we've even gotten that level of detail.
Yeah, I agree with you. So, I'm hoping we get more on this, but I have a feeling we won't hear about it again for a while.
I agree. This show seems not close. I would be shocked if we even get it next year. This feels at least at minimum 2 years away.
Yeah, I agree with you. All right, and for our last bit of news, the first trailer for the CW's Gotham Knights introduces viewers to Batman's adopted son, the Joker's daughter, and Misha Collins' Harvey Dent. Cletus, after seeing this trailer, this looks like it's going to be a terrible show. And I am not seeing much positive feedback from DC fans online either.
No, Drew, did you see I think the funniest thing I saw is the Twitter account for the video game Gotham Knights that's coming out sometime in the future put a tweet out explicitly saying that they are not associated with the show. I think to make sure that the brand name for their video game doesn't get hurt by how intense the negative reaction to the trailer was.
That's
You
funny.
know that's bad, Drew, because that's going like clearly against corporate synergy, which is definitely not what the like ideal marketing would be, right? Like I'm sure they don't necessarily want to tie the two together, but like in the perfect world for DC and the higher ups, people are like, "Oh, that show looks good," and then they see a video game with the same title, like, "Oh, well, now I have to buy that," even though I know they're not related. But you know what I mean? Like ideally, from a business standpoint, that's what you would want. And instead, they got the opposite, where the video game had to come out and specifically say, "Hey, that's not us. We have nothing to do with that. Don't judge our video game based off that." That is a nightmare scenario for DC.
Yeah, I honestly think they should have came up with a different name for the show.
Yes, I agree with you, but Drew, I think it was intentional. I mean, I could be wrong, but I really think it was intentional. One, I think the video game was meant to already be out now, to be fair. It's been shown seemingly far in development for a while now, and it keeps getting delayed, which is whatever. I don't really care. But I think the video game was supposed to be out around now, and it's not been. But I think they wanted to capitalize either on the popularity of the video game comes out, and then, hey, look, this show, or vice versa. Hey, this show's really good. It's the same age group we want to appeal to. We get all these teens interested in the show. Maybe they'll buy our video game. And instead, this happened. Are either you or I surprised by this? No. I mean, this has been an obvious disaster from the start. Just the description of the show sounded awful. So, of course, the trailer was bad.
At one point, I was thinking this thing was going to get canceled. I think it was too far along for it to get canceled. With a trailer out already, I was surprised that a trailer came out already. I would have expected it in the fall.
We talked about this, I think, last podcast, Drew. If not recently, we've discussed this recently. I think they had to pick this up because they canceled so many other shows. They needed something to fill the schedule. And they knew, right? They knew Naomi was a bust. They knew Batwoman was a bust at this point. Regardless of what your opinion of the quality of the show, ratings-wise, bust, right? Legends was enough of a bust at this point, I guess, old enough of a show. They canceled that. You gotta put something in the air. Maybe Gotham Knights is bad, but you don't know for sure that it's bad. And so you take a chance on that as opposed to a season two of Naomi, which you know for sure will bomb. I honestly, I think that's the decision that they made.
Yeah, I can definitely see that point. And I have a feeling it's gonna get canceled sooner than later.
Oh, I don't think it's going to get past season one. Unless it just like pulls a huge upset in its viewership. Because I remember when the Riverdale show first came out, there was some definite mixed reactions to, footage and stuff that was coming out for it. I would say generally there was a lot more curiosity underneath that, where people were like, well, that's really weird. That doesn't look like Archie, but I'm kind of curious to check it out. It ended up doing very well, like as you might remember, Drew, like shockingly well with the target demographic, very, very well. So it's possible out of nowhere this show ends up actually somehow managing to appeal to its core demographic. Early signs point towards that maybe not being the case, though.
Yeah. Well, I guess we'll just have to wait and see about that. All right. Well, that wraps up our DC news for this week. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll do our comics talk.
Modern Musicology is a podcast covering topics on rock and pop, ranging mostly from the 70s, 80s, and 90s, with occasional excursions into the 60s and aughts, and even occasionally the 2010s. Anything is fair game. Classic rock, R&B, folk, punk, prog, rap, metal, and way more, with two Americans, one Brit, a ton of fun, and a healthy dose of cynicism.
Hey, Dad, what's the Soulforge podcast?
The Soulforge podcast is all about life, the universe, and everything.
Is it good for kids?
Oh, no, it's not good for kids.
Is it geeky?
Oh, it can be geeky, but it can also be serious. We talk about life, sex, dating, and mental health, and so much more.
Where can you find a Soulforge podcast?
You can find it everywhere. iTunes, Spotify, Pandora, Amazon Music, and the ESO Network.
And we're back! But before we get into this week's comic books talk, we gotta let you know, there's gonna be spoilers.
We got spoilers.
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 We got spoilers.
Spoilers.
For you. We got spoilers.
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 We've got spoilers.
Spoilers.
For you. For you.
All right, let's talk the Jurassic League number one. A spaceship is sent to a planet that has both dinosaurs and humanoids. A humanoid couple see a ship crash and go to investigate. The humanoids find an egg that hatches. A humanoid hand reaches for the reptilian hand, and a family bond is formed. The outskirts of Growtham City, the Batwalker hunts a monster that kills for pleasure. Jokerzard. Jokerzard promises to add the Batwalker's bones to his collection. Joker Zard spews some sort of liquid on the Batwalker, causing his body to start shutting down. The Batwalker sees a boy with his parents dead and then remembers a scent from when his parents were killed. The Batwalker realizes Joker Zard killed his parents. The Batwalker becomes enraged with anger and beats down the Joker Zard. The young humanoid distracts Batwalker and the Joker Zard escapes. Elsewhere, Black Mantisaurus emerges from the water and demands to be worshipped by the humanoids. A boy tells his mother not to worry because the savior of the waves is coming to save them. A beast with a trident and dolphin shows up and fights the Black Mantisaurus. On Trimascura, a daughter continues to have visions of beings like her. The mother shows her the body of a terrible leader, Ares, who once tried to rule their island. The mother tells Wonderdun that the visions are a sign that it is time for her daughter to forge a path in the world, to fight the threats to every living creature on Earth. The mother gives Wonderdun a sword, shield, and a rope to go do battle. Wonderdun flies away from the island on a pterodon. Metragopolis, Supersore helps the humanoids with building a home. Supersore plays with some kids and then goes to visit his parents. Giganta and Bro Bizarro show up to collect the humanoids' bodies, stating the Dark Embryo has called them for his great purpose. To be continued.
This was dumb fun for me, Drew. I mean, the story's not anything highbrow, but I mean, I don't think anybody was expecting that. It's exactly what I hoped for. It is dumb in a good way. Like, it's just dumb fun. Like, what if the Justice League was dinosaurs? It's great. Again, this is not winning an Eisner.
Definitely not.
But that's okay. I don't think that's what the series was purporting itself to be. I think it's delivered exactly what it promised to be, at least through one issue.
Yeah, it's basically silly fun. You know, yeah. It's kind of like the comic version of Legends.
Exactly. That's a great example. I enjoyed it. I had a good time reading it. You know, there was a lot of really silly stuff in it, but it was all just like in a good way. I definitely recommend checking this out. Like, if you like more serious stuff, definitely give it a pass because it's not serious. But yeah, just an enjoyable read. Nothing groundbreaking. I did like that the Batman dinosaur seems a little bit more violent. Not because I like a more violent Batman, but because it makes sense. He's a dinosaur, right? Like, so I liked that creative decision. That was some of the thing. Like, again, the story is just kind of stupid fun, but there were some decisions there that I thought were smart choices where, like, yeah, Batman's going to be a little bit more vicious because he's a dinosaur. He's not a person. So there's stuff like that I kind of liked.
Yeah, and this was basically just an introduction to the characters. I'm sure as the series goes along, we're going to see them come together to be the Jurassic League. So,
of course. And I'm sure it'll be a very sophisticated, well-thought-out way that they come together, too. So,
yeah, this is just good fun. So if you're looking for something silly and fun, this is perfect for you. All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week. Justice League versus the Legion of Superheroes number 3. New Metropolis, the HQ of the Legion of Superheroes. In the sky, there is an unnatural hole in the space-time continuum. The Legion and the Justice League are in the 31st century talking with Gold Lantern, who's in the 21st century right outside the Hall of Justice. Batman has Computo show a list of known criminal entities who have been using or abusing time traveling during the 31st century and cross-reference it with a list from the 21st century. And they find a guy named Epoch. Something happens to the other members, but Batman is revived. Batman states they were warned to destroy the Gold Lantern ring. Brainiac, Naomi, and Mon-El were teleported to the future where they meet Commandy. Irma, Garth, and Rock are in the future of Batman Beyond. Aquaman and Ultra Boy are in the time of the dinosaurs. And Gold Lantern realizes he's in a different time too. To be continued.
It would be a lie to say that nothing happens in this issue, Drew, but also, I mean, not a lot, right? Like, I don't know what we totally accomplished in this issue. I still kind of struggle. I know vaguely what this series is about, right? Whatever this darkness thing is causing, you know, a warp in the space-time continuum. People are getting thrown into different time eras, and they're mixing the Legion and the Justice League. But, like, to what end? You know what I mean? Like, I feel like we just keep... All three issues to me so far, Drew, have felt vaguely issue one-ish in terms of, like, they still feel like they're setting, like, early stages of setting something up. But we're three issues in now.
Yeah, but this is typical Bendis we've been seeing with DC stuff.
Oh, I agree.
So I agree, I totally agree with all your points, Cletus, but honestly, this is what I expect out of Bendis anymore. And you've got this story talking about the Great Darkness, and you got Williamson's story talking about the Great Darkness, but for some reason it doesn't feel like they're the exact same thing. And I don't know if they're supposed to be or not, but it does feel like a different story.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think they're the same thing either. Obviously, we could be proven wrong, but I agree with you. It does not seem to be the same. I don't know. I agree with you completely. This is exactly what Bendis has been doing with his books. It's just, I wouldn't even say frustrating at this point. I don't understand what he's doing. I am fine. If you want to do an event comic that mixes in the Legion and Justice League, Drew, that's a good idea. I like that. Having it be some sort of time travel thing, that makes total sense. I like a lot of the idea behind what he's doing, and it's just I don't even know to call it execution or not, Drew, because I don't feel like he's really done anything yet. And it's not even necessarily, I can't say that they're just standing around talking this time. Well, there was some of that. Like, stuff is happening, but I don't know how he does it, Drew. He manages to, like, have stuff happen, but yet not move anywhere. Like, things happened in almost every page of this comic. So, I mean, it wasn't, like, a complete lack of action, but it was just treading water. I know I'm preaching to the choir on this, but it was just, as I was reading, I was like, Bendis, what are you doing, buddy? Like, look, move the story forward here, dude.
Yeah, really. And I'm just glad we're not getting the Justice League battling against the Legion of Superheroes. So that's one thing I'm happy we haven't seen yet. And I have to say yet, because you never know. He might.
Yeah, I was going to say, I feel like we have to emphasize yet, because although I am sure they will not ultimately be antagonistic, I mean, the title implies at some point there will be some conflict. So, yeah.
Yeah. All right, well, let's move on to our next issue for this week. Naomi, Season 2, Number 3. Mrs. McDuffie is upset because Mr. McDuffie doesn't know where Naomi is. Hawkgirl shows up at the front door looking for Naomi. Star Labs International Laboratory. Cyborg tells Naomi to close the portal. Naomi doesn't know how. Naomi fights the monster instead while Cyborg figures out how to shut down the portal with the controls damaged. Naomi is injured during the battle with the monster, but she heals. Her healing powers hurt. Naomi has Cyborg look through the video footage to find out information about Dee. Wherever Dee went, Naomi can't follow and is told to go home. The next day, Naomi goes back to high school. She is chatting with her friends on the football field when they hear a big boom. Naomi suits up and finds that Dee has returned. He's crashed into one of the school's buildings and seems to be unconscious. To be continued. Gotta tell you, Cletus, I'm glad they finally defined something about her powers.
Yes.
She can heal, but it hurts.
I agree. Well, and also just like she's an energy generator, which I mean, we kind of, I think, could have surmised that, Drew. But again, just having it defined for us is so pleasant and so nice. Like, okay, I can work with this. She generates energy. I mean, we kind of have seen this. It's not like that was something new, but... Again, to actually put the words out there, to define something that she can do and some potential limitations. Like you said, it hurts when she heals. It's not just like a Wolverine's kind of thing. That's great. I like it. I have to say, Drew, the show has really gotten in my head with this comic. And like every time the parents are on the page now, I'm like, are they bad?
I know. I've been wondering. That's what crossed my mind, too, when I read this issue. Sometimes they're antagonistic, sometimes they're not. I don't know. We saw where the show stands with the parents. I don't know where Bendis stands with the parents.
To be clear, I don't think there's some conflict between them and Naomi, but it still seems parental at this point. But it seemed parental on the show, too, until it did a complete 180 right at the end of the season. So I wouldn't say there's been any, I don't know. I mean, I guess the first issue of this season was a little bit more outright teasing antagonistic from the dad, and that's kind of continued. But I still don't think I would be thinking that they're potentially bad guys, Drew, if the show didn't exist. I think if I was only reading the comic, I don't know that I would be going there.
Yeah, I wouldn't be going there, I can tell you that. Now, the other thing I wanted to point out was D in this. At the end of the last issue, it was like he had murdered somebody before he went through the portal. But in this issue, it felt like that D was, at least from Naomi's perspective, D was after Zumbato, is what I thought. In this,
I mean, they make that pretty clear in this issue, Drew. I agree that he's after Zumbato, but that was a surprise to me because I don't feel like we knew that she had surmised that last issue. You know what I mean? Like, I don't remember knowing that. She was saying it as if we had established that knowledge the previous issue, but I was like, wait, he was? I thought we were still trying to figure that out. And yet this issue, it almost immediately, she seemed to know, like, oh, I don't know, Drew, maybe I'm just forgetting a detail, but I almost wonder if that was a thing that, like, Bendis knew that and forgot the audience didn't know that.
Yeah, I have a feeling you're right. I think Bendis ended up clarifying it, but forgot to clarify it in the first issue. And with him killing somebody, though, I wonder if it wasn't him or something happened that somebody got killed and they're just blaming D for it. I don't know. He needs to clarify that, too.
I don't wonder if it's going to get clarified, to be honest with you.
It may not. I mean, something as bad as a murder, it shouldn't be glazed over, but you're right. It probably will get glazed over.
Yeah, I don't mean necessarily like intentionally just not answering a question. I almost wonder, this is speculation, obviously, because we don't know how the rest of the series goes, but it feels a little bit like he kind of changed his mind on something or what he was doing. And I almost wonder if we're just not going to go back to that because whatever that was doesn't matter to the story now. I don't know. Ideally, I think Bendis has demonstrated in the past that he's a better writer than that, but maybe not as much recently, so I don't know.
Yeah. Guess we'll just have to wait and see on that. All right, well, let's move on to our next issue for this week. Batman, Urban Legends number 15. Our first story is Batman and Zatanna in Bound to Our Will, part 5 of 6. Batman and Zatanna have a word they use that when one of them says it, the other one drops what they are doing and listens. When Zatanna uses it, Batman does not honor it. And then the next time Batman needs Zatanna's help, Batman is too ashamed to say the word. In the present, Batman comes to Z in someone else's body and forms a plan. Zatanna tricks the evil entity through the porthole. Batman and Constantine battle the entities. To be concluded.
One thing for our listeners who haven't read this comic and are only getting the recap, you should know that Drew put the events in order. They are not in order in the comic with the flashbacks. They actually do the Batman rejection of the word first, and then they go back further in the next flashback. And like, ultimately, Drew, there's enough context there for you to figure out the order of those things, but I thought that was a bizarre decision by them that I don't know was the right one. I think it would have made more sense to put the flashbacks in order, personally.
I agree with you, Cletus. And I know my recap is pretty short on this. The story felt a lot longer. But I gave you all the nuts and bolts you needed.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. No, but again, like, your recap is completely accurate in terms of the sequence of events. I don't know why they didn't put the flashback specifically. I get spacing them out and having them bookended by the present action. I totally understand that. I thought it was weird that they did it the way that they did. And they kind of, with the bookending of the present day action, they gave enough context and enough explanation for you to put it together. So it wasn't like I was lost, but I remember just when I finished it, I had to, like, when I finished the second flashback, I had to go back and reread a little bit of the first one just to be like, okay, do I remember this right? And I don't know. I don't know that there was enough artistically or whatever story. I think it would have done better in order. I think sometimes you can get, you know, you can do something really interesting by telling a story out of order. I get that, but this didn't seem like the time, because they've not really been doing that with this comic in general. Like, we've gotten flashbacks certainly throughout this Santana story, but it's always been in order. So it was a weird choice on their part.
Yeah, I agree. All right, our next story is called Batman and Plastic Man in Bending the Rules. Penguin hires the KGBs to take out one of his former employees, Sampy, who just happens to be an old friend of Plastic Man. Plastic Man saves Sampy while Batman takes on KG Beast. Working together, Plastic Man and Batman take out the KG Beast, and Sampy takes a deal with the DA. The end.
I really like that we got a Plastic Man team up, Drew, but I mean the story was not bad, but it wasn't great either. Relatively simplistic, which, I mean, I guess it's a Plastic Man story, so I'm not expecting depth, but I don't know. It was, again, simplistic is the best way to put it. It didn't really do a whole lot for me.
Yeah, I didn't think it had a whole lot of funny to it, like I usually expect out of Plastic Man.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it had a little bit of humor, but it was just, the story was just so vanilla and basic, like, Batman's after a criminal. Plastic Man teaches Batman the benefits of humanity. The end. And it was like, I mean, one, Batman has a heart. So, like, that didn't totally land with me, Drew. I mean, it works a little bit with Batman. But then also just from a practicality standpoint, I didn't fully understand what the difference was, because the guy, Plastic Man's friend, was turning himself into the police one way or the other. I didn't understand whether it made, like, what difference does it make if Batman brings him in forcibly or he goes voluntarily? Like, ultimately, if the police want to use him as an informant, they're going to do it one way or the other. You know what I mean, Drew? Like, it didn't affect, like, the ultimate outcome, Plastic Man's friend goes into custody and becomes an informant. I feel like one way or the other, and I just didn't, I don't know. It didn't seem like it mattered whether Batman, like, quote, gave him a second chance or not.
Yeah, I agree with you. It didn't really matter whether he went in on his own or if Batman brought him in. The same outcome was going to happen.
Right, but that was the whole crux of the story, and that was sort of the problem. Like, I was reading it, I was like, this doesn't make sense. Like, sure, maybe he's less likely to get a favorable deal if Batman brings him in forcibly, but again, ultimately, if they want to use him as an informant, and he clearly is willing to do that, then they're gonna do that whether Batman brings him in or not. If you want to do a story about Batman learning a lesson of it being worth giving someone a second shot, like Plastic Man got, there's got to be a better way to do that plot than this.
We've seen stories where Batman gives people second chances before.
Right. Yeah. Well, that was the other thing again, where it was like, I mean, let's not act like Batman doesn't do this. I mean, you can sell me a story where he's being a hard ass, yes, and somebody else needs to talk him down. I can totally buy that, Drew. So I didn't have a huge problem with that, but it was what they were talking him down from. It was like, it just doesn't really matter. So again, fine. The story was fine. It was all right. We've read worse.
That we have. All right. Our next story is The Birds of Prey in Memory Lane, part 2 of 3. The so-called Birds of Prey capture the bad guy, Noah. Katana gets mad when Lady Shiva takes her phone. Gotham City is in chaos because of the app. Katana attacks Lady Shiva, stating she didn't come here to stop Noah. Katana came here to stop Lady Shiva. To be concluded. So, I'm not going to rant about them not being the Birds of Prey. So, but I kind of made that clear in my recap.
My main takeaway when I finished reading this was, what? What, Drew? What? What is? I'm lost. I'm not gonna lie. What's going on here? They, like you said, they captured, at least apparently, seemingly captured the villain, but then all of a sudden they're fighting Shiva. What? What?
Well, you know what? I've never known Lady Shiva to be a good guy.
True. And again, like, they were late. What was weird, Drew, is that it felt like the comic was kind of trying to do like, it was trying to be about or threaten multiple things at once. So clearly, this memory app thing is clearly bad, right? Clearly, not good things are being set up with this. We see a lady delivering phones with, like, trying to hook people on the app. So, like, we see that that is bad. That seems to be the threat. And then, at least my understanding, reading the comic, is at least by appearances, they've captured the guy behind the app. Is that true? I don't know. But then they all of a sudden they pivot and they're like, no, actually she was the villain. And I don't know if she really is or if Katana is now also fallen under the grasp of this app because we see her keep trying to use it. Drew, I was confused. I'm not going to lie at the end. And I didn't like care enough about the story to try and clarify it. But I just, when I finished it, I was like, wait, what?
So if we got one more part of it, maybe they'll clarify it, maybe they're not.
Oh, I'm sure they will. I'm sure it'll at least vaguely make more. I'm sure there'll be some sort of conclusion. I just it was just a little too sloppy for me in that it just seemed like the Shiva pivot seemed a little too brisk to me. Again, I agree with you, Drew. It's not weird to see her potentially be antagonistic, but it wasn't what the comic was about, and then it was. And maybe, again, maybe that's just a tease, and maybe that's not really what's going on, but it definitely left me confused at the end of the comic.
I understand that. My biggest problem, you know, is calling this a Birds of Prey, but...
that is fair.
That's one of my biggest problems with this. All right, well, let's move on to our last story. Ace and Batman in Hounded Part 5 of 6. Batman is brought before the villains to be auctioned off to the highest bidder. They want proof that he is the real Batman, so the auctioneer is going to have him fight a grizzly bear. Ace and his friends are trying to rescue the grizzly. The chicken gets killed in an ambush. To be concluded. I gotta tell you, that chicken dying kind of got to me in this issue. I was kind of liking the chicken in this issue, and then at the end I'm like, what? No more chicken?
Man, that's Russell for you. He has just again, for as funny of a writer as he is, he can really, really hit some down notes in there, like in a good way, in that like they are very effective at making you feel the story. And I agree with you, Drew. I was sad when the chicken died too, and I was like, this is ridiculous. I'm sad that a robot chicken died.
I know that the whole concept of the chicken is kind of ridiculous.
It is. It's a joke. Like, let's be honest. Like, that's definitely partly a joke character, right? And yet, that's just a sign of how effective his writing is, that both you and I were like, oh, no.
He got me attached to that stupid chicken.
I know. And I would be bummed, like, if any of the other animals... So we see at the end of the issue, the bear is going to have to fight Batman. If something happens to the bear, that, like, I'm not going to feel good about that either. I've very much been enjoying this mini story. I like it too, Drew, because it's a little bit different than a normal Russell story. Like, it's still, you can tell it's distinctly his writing, but there's definitely a little bit different flavor to it. Obviously a little bit more violence than we normally see for sure, but then a little bit more seriousness mixed in with the humor and just good stuff. I can't wait for the conclusion because I've enjoyed the story, but also, like, if it went on for another 6 issues, I wouldn't be upset either.
Yeah, and we talked about this before. We know how it's gonna end.
Right.
So he's obviously pinned what he wants his ending to be, but you know, he could have a little twist into it. But I've been enjoying it, Santa. I'm gonna miss the chicken. All right, well, let's move on to our next issue for this week. I Am Batman number 9. Detective Chubb stops Batman from giving a murderer a beating after he's been put down. Batman is still upset about the Man Ray incident. Vol is trying to buy an upscale bomb shelter property for Jace with cash, and the realtor is concerned because Vol is Russian. Tanya Fox is in a meeting with the mayor about Police Commissioner Beckett being a racist. Detective Chubb finds another cop, Keenan, snooping around her computer. Keenan tells Detective Chubb she can either get herself in line or end up in the New York Harbor all by her lonesome. Detective Chubb tells Batman about Keenan trying to find information on Man Ray. Keenan wants to find Man Ray and kill him before her team can bring him in for justice and a trial. Jace meets with Hadia in Central Park, and she takes him to the Museum of Modern Art, where Jace learns about Surrealism, the artistic movement that began in Europe after the First World War. It was defined by the absence of reason. The less logic, the more beauty. Emmanuel Radonezky was a brilliant American artist who went by the name Man Ray. There was a legendary murder in Los Angeles in the 1940s, the Black Dahlia killing. A young woman was tortured, vivisected, and put on display like both Rubel and Beckett were. There are people that think the murder was inspired by Man Ray's art. Batman meets up with Detective Chubb and their team. Working together, the team locates a place Man Ray has been squatting. His next target is Mayor Villanova. Detective Chubb states if the mayor is dirty, then they are screwed.
Another really interesting issue for me, at least for me, Drew. I mean, we've talked about it almost every time with this new part of the series, how beneficial it's been for them to move it to New York City. It's allowed the book to have its own feel. It's not weighted down by whatever Batman current events are going on or past Batman events. It's just allowed to completely breathe and be its own thing. And it's suited the comic very well. And that continues in this issue.
I was surprised that he brought in a real legendary murder, kind of tying it into the villain and stuff. I found that pretty interesting. And I'm continuing to really enjoy this series. I thought this was a really good issue, and I'm excited to see where this goes from here.
I agree. I mean, this villain that he's created is really interesting. It's got me interested in finding more of the story and uncovering more of the mystery there. And again, just being freed from the shackles of Gotham, it's just so nice because he doesn't have to... He clearly... Drew, one thing that... Whether you like it or not, he clearly didn't particularly care much for whatever the rest of the Batman team was doing. I don't necessarily blame him. That's fine. But now he doesn't even have to pretend, right? He doesn't even have to give a cursory, this is sort of what's going on right now. He can just do his own thing, and the story has benefited greatly from not needing to split its focus between the story that he wants to tell and the other story that DC needs him to tell.
Yeah, I agree with you. One of the things I want to mention is, I honestly think he's doing it very slowly, but I think the writer is setting up Jace's sister to be Robin, and I think it's going to be a slow burn for that, but I'm kind of excited about it, because I want to see them working together. I kind of like that future story he did with them working together, and I'm hoping he does it here in this series.
Yeah, I think he will. I think you're right, Drew, because we, like you said, we've seen a flash forward where she is sort of a Robin-esque character. And like you said, it definitely seems like he's building that up in this comic, too. And why wouldn't you? I mean, everybody, like, Robin's an interesting character for a reason, right? Regardless of who that Robin is or whether that's actually the name, but like, there's a reason people keep coming back to that, right? It works. It's interesting. So I would be shocked if he didn't.
Yeah. And it's always, Batman and Robin's always had a kind of family feel to it. I think it'd be really interesting for brother-sister to be partnered together as Batman and Robin. So I'm hoping we'll get to see that unfold here.
Yeah, and that's interesting, right? Because the closest we've gotten is when Dick and Damian were Batman and Robin, and, in a sense, they're brothers. But this is going a step further, right? Brother and sister. It's something new. Obviously, I mean, it's, a similar dynamic with Batman and Robin, obviously, but... Like you said, it's a new take, it's a little new direction. It's good. I like the idea of this character from the beginning, Drew, and I think now that he's totally free to be his own character, I think we're getting a lot of the positives without the negative of, him just sort of holding on to the costume until Bruce comes back. We don't have to worry about that anymore.
Exactly. All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week, Batgirls number 6. Barbara Gordon is a prisoner of Spellbinder, a.k.a. Charles Dante, Bab's old friend from college. While Spellbinder is monologuing, Babs uses a batarang to cut herself free from the rope. Babs throws the batarang through his painting. Spellbinder shoots Babs in the face with a version of fear toxin. At the old Arkham Asylum, Batgirl Stephanie takes on Tudor by herself. Batgirl Cassie must save Grace O'Halloran when she falls from the roof. Cassie ends up falling into the same room as Stephanie. Both fight together against Tudor and his followers. Babs overcomes the fear gas and is able to take out Spellbinder. Oracle reveals the truth about Charles Dante being Spellbinder and the truth about Tudor to Gotham City public. Tudor has rigged Arkham Asylum with enough C4 to turn a city block into a crater. The Batgirls round up the explosives and Stephanie puts them in Bondo and drives the car into the river where it explodes. Back at the loft, the Batgirls mourn the loss of the car, Bondo. Seer shows up and asks for their help. I'm sure you didn't fall for the old fake out that Stephanie was dead.
Well, no, Drew, but I think it would be hard to fall for it because it's the next panel that she's alive. I know you have to turn the page, but literally you flip the page and she's right there. Obviously, Drew, it's unlikely that she had died in that scene one way or the other, right? But, like, if you're not even going to pretend for a full page that she's dead, why? Like, they took up so, like, relatively speaking, right, within a 22-page comic, they took up at least a page selling you on the idea that she might be about to die, and then they don't even take a single panel to pretend otherwise? I mean, okay, what's the point then?
Exactly. And I thought it was pretty funny how quickly they rounded up the C4. It was like, this whole place is rigged with C4. It's like a panel or two, and they've already got it all rounded up. I'm like, dang, that was quick.
Yeah, it was weird. It was a weird scene, Drew, because, like you said, like, obviously I'm reading it, and I don't think that she's actually going to die. But I was like, oh, they're really selling the scene, right? And then she's literally in the next panel. She's the first character you see. It's like, why? I don't know. It confused me, Drew, and that was just like, but why? I'm not thrilled about teasing character deaths for people that you're not actually going to follow through on it with, because to me it's a waste of time. But whatever. If you can at least do something interesting with it for a little bit, I get it. I might not agree with it, but I get it. But this, they didn't even bother. They didn't even reference that it was a close call. You know what I mean? Like, they didn't even, like, wow, it was a close call, Steph. We almost lost you. No, it's just, whatever. You're drinking coffee. That's normal.
But we got to remember, this isn't geared towards us.
True, Drew, but I also wonder how much that would, like, again, they gave so little time in between the apparent death and the reveal that she's not dead. Literally no time at all. That I don't know that that's even going to land with a middle schooler. Because you're right. This book isn't meant for us primarily. But having taught middle schoolers for some time now, Drew, I don't know that that would really land with them either.
It may not. I don't know.
They're smarter than you think most of the time. Not all the time. But
So obviously, you know, Seer shows up. Does she generally need help? Or is this going to be some sort of trick? So, because we'll find that out next issue.
I wonder if it's going to be a blend of both. I know that that's a cheap answer, but I don't think it's going to be a perfect team up, but I feel like she is going to legitimately need help, Drew. It seems very much in the character of this comic for her to not be a pure antagonist.
Yeah, I agree with you. All right, well, let's move on to our next issue for this week. Superman, Son of Kal-El, number 11. John tells Batman he's wrong about Jay Nakamura. Batman states that Jay is connected to a group called the Revolutionaries, and they are violent extremists. Batman has a talk with Paul Kent and learns that he talked with Alfred every week when he was alive. Paul Kent tells Batman that John needs to learn from his own mistakes. If there is something sinister about Jay, John will find it. It might crush him, but he'll find it. John goes to visit Nightwing to get his opinion on Jay. John asks Nightwing if he should investigate Jay. Nightwing states that's what Batman would do, but that's not you. John decides that he should go talk to Jay, and Nightwing agrees. Jay tells John that Bendix and his people experimented on him for 6 months. Jay escaped Gamora on a boat, but he was not the only one, and he didn't get far. Bendix sent a gunboat to bring them down. The revolutionaries saved them, but they don't hold back. The U.S. government forced the revolutionaries to work for them by putting bombs in their heads. Jay shows John footage of the Gamora Corps and the guy who blew up in John's arms. Jay thinks Bendix is controlling them remotely. John goes to the Hall of Justice and talks to Flash Wally West. Wally tells John that the Burning Man is really Lachlan Shrapnel. Last seen in New York 6 months ago, Wally thinks he was kidnapped, but Lachlan doesn't have any memory of this. When Lachlan falls asleep, the Atom tries to deactivate the device. Bendix is alerted when the tamper protection system is triggered. Bendix takes control of Inferno. John flies Inferno into the atmosphere where the oxygen is thin. Bendix tries to blow up Inferno, but John disables the device. Bendix calls Luthor in a panic. Bendix wants Luthor to do what he promised, kill Superman John Kent.
I want to talk about the back half of the issue first, Drew, because I have less to say with that. I thought it was good. I really liked the, you know, the sort of threat with the bomb in the guy's head with the Atom first trying to get it out before Superman does his, you know, heat ray, X-ray vision combo to solve the bomb. That was all good. And that was a lot of what we've gotten, like good, you know, just Superman being Superman action from Tom Taylor. The first part of this issue, there was a lot of stuff I like. I loved the heart-to-heart between Bruce and Pa Kent. I have to say, Joe Drew, it felt a little, the twist with Jay potentially not being who he says he is, feeling a little bit hollow when John goes to talk to him. And he's just like, yeah, I mean, Bendix is the bad guy once again. Now, my hope here, Drew, is that Jay really is up to maybe something a little bit more than what John is onto right now, because that would be a really interesting, but they would also give a purpose to this entire exchange between Batman and Superman and then Jay and Superman. Because on the other hand, if this is taken at face value and it really is just a, I was saved by violent revolutionaries, I don't love everything they do, but they saved me. It's not bad, Drew. It's not bad. It doesn't ruin my enjoyment of the comic, but it's a little bit of a boring answer, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And you would think, you know, knowing Batman, he would have investigated that a little more to realize that
yeah.
Jay is not actually part of the group.
Right. I agree. Yes, I totally agree with you, because that seemed, again, my hope is that Jay is at least partly lying, right? He's not telling the full truth of the story. Not because I want him to be a bad guy necessarily, but it's more interesting. I'm just being honest. Like, selfishly to me, the story is more interesting if Jay is up to something. So, and like you said, it would make a little bit more sense for Batman not only to research that, like, I mean, get Batman researching, it makes sense to begin with, but then feeling compelled enough to warn John. You would hope there would be a purpose behind that and not just like, yeah, I think maybe something's wrong. That doesn't really feel like Bruce.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I agree with you on that.
To be clear, just to clarify my stance, if what Jay's story is actually the truth, I'm not going to be mad. It's not going to ruin my enjoyment of the comic. I'm hoping for something a little bit spicier.
Well, something a little more nuanced.
Yes, agreed.
All right, let's move on to our last issue for this week, Wonder Woman number 787. Nubia notices Diana is troubled and tells her to speak her mind. Diana states that her mother is gone and Themyscira is in ruins. Her heart has never been so heavy. Nubia tells Diana, "Our sisters stand together and are prepared to do the work. Your help is appreciated, but is not needed. Return to your duties unburdened by misplaced guilt." Diana states that before she departs, she is going to take care of Altum. He claimed to have a submarine just off the shores of Themyscira. Diana finds Altum and fights him. Using the Lasso of Truth, Altum reveals he was part of countless damned souls cast into the pit of Tartarus. Tasked with the cleansing of Themyscira of titans and beasts, in return, the gods promised freedom and a second chance at life. Altum hated the Amazons because the gods loved them like they never loved his people. The gods didn't hold up their bargain, but Altum escaped. Now that Altum remembers the truth, he chooses to die in the sinking submarine. Steve Trevor's apartment, Washington, D.C. Steve and Siegfried are getting dressed to go meet Diana. Ida picks them up in her car. As they are driving under a bridge, some punks throw a bottle of milk onto the windshield. One of them calls Ida a cow. When the two punks get cornered, one of them jumps off the bridge stating Dr. Sisko's name. Diana shows up and ties him up in the lasso of truth. Steve and Ida are working for Checkmate, and now Siggy is on the payroll. Ida tells Diana they have been keeping an eye on Dr. Sisko. Steve tells Diana that Siggy has moved into his spare bedroom. That evening, Dr. Sisko has a meeting with the new and improved Villainy Incorporated, Dr. Poison, Professor Calculus, the Twin Shadows, and Sweetheart, Sisko's Wonder Woman duplicate. They wrapped up that Altum story super quick.
Yeah, I felt conflicted about it, Drew, because I liked the answer, so to speak, that they gave. Like, they kind of answered the mystery of what's going on with him, what's the story there. A satisfying answer, honestly, in that regard. I don't know that I felt satisfied with him just dying right there, though, either. And maybe he didn't. We don't know for sure that he did, but the implication seemed fairly strong, right? that was the end for him. It was odd, Drew. They did so much with him, and they even, like, incorporated him a little bit into the event, and then all for just that. I don't know. I wasn't totally satisfied with that.
I think the reason why you weren't satisfied with it is probably the reason I'm not. They kind of build him up to be this villain, and honestly, he really wasn't.
And honestly, that part is fine with me, Drew. I'm okay with it. Like I said, I liked the answer of what his story was. That was interesting to me, where, you know, essentially he was used and abused by the gods and then basically lied to himself to deal with the trauma of that. That's interesting to me, Drew. I liked that. It was so abrupt. Like, we got this. They've been using him on and off, you know, for a while now, and then they finally give you an interesting answer with him, and then they just kill him. I was like, well, okay, I guess. I don't know. I didn't need him to be a huge megavillain. It was just so brief, I guess. I just wasn't prepared for that to just be the end. They wrapped it up. And the same thing, honestly, Drew, again, this is the second Wonder Woman book or Wonder Woman adjacent book that we've read that has just not referenced the outcome of what's going on with Hippolyta's death. I don't understand. I am not nearly content or satisfied with the amount of information they've given to us in that regard.
I don't know if it's going to be in a future story or if it was dictated to the creative teams. You guys are going to kill Hippolyta. And, you know, they weren't given any reason why. They were just supposed to do it. And they didn't have a good reason why.
I got to assume that they're telling a story in the future with it. I just don't... In what book? Is it going to be in the Nubia story? Maybe. I could see that one being the one that they answer that question in. Is Wonder Girl going to maybe get another comic in the future, a miniseries or something, and maybe they answer it there? I don't know. It doesn't seem to be this book, Drew. This book seems to be pretty focused on the Dr. Psycho story, understandably. But you can't tell us that Artemis is the one who murdered Hippolyta and hint that there's a reason, like a legitimate reason for it, because she didn't seem thrilled that she did it, right? Speaking of Artemis herself. And so it's baffling that they've left it at that.
Okay. I want you to think back. Do you remember? I can't remember. It was before the Trial of the Amazon started. There was this weird meeting with Hippolyta, Artemis, what was Farika's other queen, her mate its name, Atlantia. Do you remember some sort of meeting between them and a fourth person?
I do, but I just remember that it happened, Drew. I don't remember anything else about it.
Because I wondered.
I think this is stuck in the back. They do have a story defined for it. I don't think that they would just say Artemis did it and leave it at that. I think there is a story. I'm just confused at when they're going to tell us that story. It's bizarre to me that they've not even, in my opinion, hinted at where you can find that story continued. That's weird to me because that seems like a great, just even from a sales point, right? Like, hey, if you want to find out what the heck was behind Hippolyta's death, read such and such a book.
Okay, now listen to this real quick. They showed us that little meeting or whatever it was for a reason. I wonder if this was planned. If Hippolyta's death was planned and Hippolyta knew it was coming, and maybe there's some sort of reason for it, or maybe she's coming back at some point or something. I don't know. I think there was something behind that meeting. I actually want to go back and check that out. I can't remember which book it was in, though.
Drew, maybe. I think you were – I totally agree with you. I think you're right. Also, because just within Trial of the Amazons, the last scene that she's alive, I felt like there was hints that she knew she was about to go. Like, she knew it was her last moment. So I agree with you. Like I said, I think they do have the story. I don't think that they don't know what it is. I just – they've not told us when or where they're telling that story, and that's the thing that's weird to me.
Yeah. So I'm sure something's going to be coming up in the future. I don't know where it's going to be at either. Now, I wanted to bring up something that is kind of weird. We've got Steve and Siggy living together. I don't know if you want to call them exes of Diana. It seems weird, doesn't it?
I don't even know that they're exes, Drew. I feel like it's a little bit unclear what each of their statuses are with her right now, right? Like, maybe they're exes, maybe they're not. I don't know, Drew. I agree with you. It is a little bit weird. I think it's especially a little bit weird because I'm not entirely sure what her status is with both of them.
It felt like to me that, you know, Steve was in the ex mode. I wasn't sure about Siggy. And, you know, I'm sure she still has feelings for both of them. They're living together. You can't tell me that's not weird to her. But they kind of had it seem like she was fine in it with this, in this issue. But I don't actually think she's fine with it. It's an interesting triangle. And I have a feeling they're going to be playing around with it in future stories.
Yeah, I agree with you, Drew.
So that'll be interesting for sure. All right, we also had a backup story in this, Young Diana. Antiope returns to Themyscira. Queen Hippolyta isn't very pleased to see her. Diana, on the other hand, is very excited. Antiope gives Diana a few gifts. When Diana objects about being queen, Antiope wonders if Themyscira is enough for her. To be continued. I gotta tell you, I was confused with the to be continued because the story didn't feel like a to be continued moment to me.
I agreed you on that, and I also this backup for a while now has been aimless. I would say it's not been bad, but it's just sort of, it feels a little bit recently, Drew, like it's existing because it needs to. Like, it doesn't seem to be accomplishing anything in particular other than just giving some light flavor stories to Diana's childhood, which, let's be clear, there are far worse things they could be doing with the backup, right? Like, it's not been bad or unpleasant. It's just been odd. I don't know what else to say, Drew. It's I don't know.
I have to agree with you. It is kind of aimless. And I really like the Young Diana stories, but I like the ones we had at the beginning where it seemed more focused. Like you said, yes. These don't seem to have a focus to them. I think they need to sit down and think about where they want these backup stories to go and put a little more focus into it. It's interesting seeing Diana have some adventures. Let's focus the adventures a little bit and have her actually do something besides just kind of aimlessly living life. You know what I mean?
Yeah, because again, it's giving interesting flavor to her childhood, right? It's giving us some new stories that we haven't seen or different takes on things, whatever. And that is fine. There, again, I want to be very clear. There are far worse things they could do for a backup. But I would love it, like you said, if the stories had a reason to exist beyond existing, right? Like, I feel like they are primarily just taking up the page count to, I would assume, justify a higher price point, if we're being honest.
I'm sure that's exactly why.
And that's sort of in that, you know, I was like, we could do a little bit better than this, right? Especially because the art is great. I love the art style of the backup story. The lighthearted writing with it has been good. Like, they've got a good mix going. I like what they're doing. I would just, like you said, the initial backup story, I didn't love how the plot went, but at least there was a reason to read issue to issue just in regards to the backups, right? They connected. They were telling a linear story. These have all just been, but I don't even a moment, I guess, or a scene. I would hesitate to call a lot of these even stories because there's not really been much of a plot. It's just like, and on today's episode of Young Diana, she gardens.
Yeah, I know.
Today's episode, Diana is told a bedtime story. You know, and it's just sort of, and that's it. And it's like, again, it's not bad. It's not even unpleasant. Like, honestly, it's relatively enjoyable, but it's not doing anything either.
Exactly. All right. Well, that wraps up our comic books talk for this week. Let's take a short break. And when we come back, we'll talk our DC television shows.
It was the dawn of another podcast. The Epsilon 3 is a dream given form. It's a home away from home for three guys to watch a 90s sci-fi classic TV show. Three guys with microphones over 3,249 miles apart, all alone in the night. The year is 2021. The name of the station is Babylon 5. The name of the podcast is the Epsilon 3. Veer, bring me a drink.
We have 30 seconds to describe Thunder Talk.
We got big interviews.
Super red music.
We're proud members of the ESO network.
Yeah, they're probably going to fire us.
I wouldn't blame them.
We've got jokes.
Adult jokes.
And nerd junk.
Woke nerd junk.
All the woke nerd junk.
Find Thunder Talk on the internet.
And the ESO network.
Ta-da!
And we're back. Let's talk The Flash, Season 8, Episode 16, The Curious Case of Bartholomew Allen. Barry stops some robberies and saves a little old lady from getting ran over crossing the street. The little old lady gives Flash a butterscotch. Barry gets home just in time to roll the dice for their D&D game for family night. Joe is less than thrilled to be playing. Former Captain Singh comes to Barry with a theft from Mercury Labs. Someone has stolen a gamma absorption ray. Barry finds evidence for the Flash to check out the docks. Barry finds a van with the device in it. The villain appears and activates the device. The Flash gets hit with a wave of energy. Back at Star Labs, a scan reveals that every cell in Barry's body has deteriorated suddenly. It's like he aged 30 years overnight. The aging is affecting his powers. The scientist villain robs Magnus Labs. Flash tries to stop him with lightning, but it doesn't work. The villain hits Flash with a device he calls a thermal detonator. Flash is zapped with electricity and falls to the ground. When Barry gets back to Star Labs, he's aged another 10 years. Every time Barry uses his speed, he is aging more. Team Flash identifies the scientist villain as Peter Orloff, a former technician at a small R&D lab, Corbin Taff Industries. He was fired for using company resources on unsanctioned research. Barry and Cecile go to Orloff's lab and find his laptop. Barry needs to get the laptop back to Chester before the hard drive wipes. Barry accidentally takes them to the Great Wall of China instead of Star Labs. Barry can't remember how they got there. Orloff activates his machine that has enough power to siphon energy from the whole city. Flash uses his speed to overpower the machine and cause it to shut down. Flash gets his youth back and Orloff becomes old. Barry gets a call from Caitlin's mother. Barry goes to her apartment to check on her. When Barry learns Caitlin is trying to bring back Frost, Barry uses his lightning to destroy everything needed to bring back Frost and take back the mirror gun. Cletus, I think one of the stupidest things in this episode is the fact that Barry keeps aging internally, but not on the outside. And I gotta tell you, there was an episode of Star Trek back in the 60s, the original series, where the crew was aged up. Why couldn't we do any sort of makeup on Barry to make him look older?
Because they film these shows in like 3 days. And again, I agree. You, like you said, they've done that in the past in the 60s. So it's not like they still couldn't do that. But the show made it pretty clear, Drew, that they were going out of their way to give excuses as to why Barry wasn't aging physically on the outside. And it was, I agree with you, Drew. It's stupid. I don't want to excuse the show because it's dumb, but I'm also not shocked by that because, I mean, that's what these CW shows do. They cut corners in part because they have to because of self-imposed deadlines and budget and stuff like that. There's a reason why these shows have gotten surpassed by the HBO Max bunch.
Okay, there's one other thing I want to point out about that, because age is affecting Barry's powers, right? We have an older Flash, Jay Garrick. How come his powers aren't affected like Barry's were just because of the fact he's older?
Because the show's not consistent with its lore. Drew, you are right, and I agree with you. I just want to be clear. I am not arguing. I am fully 100% on your side. But, I mean, the reason is that the show doesn't care. That's we were like, what, 4 or 5 seasons removed from the last time the show actually cared to follow through on previously established precedent.
Yes, that's true. And even in this show, when we have the Flash, who's having a problem using his powers, but he can still move Mach 10.
Yeah.
And he should have been able to dodge that thermal detonator. I'm sorry. And I don't even know why we're calling it a thermal detonator. Come on, that's a Star Wars thing. Okay, I'm just getting off. Also, go ahead with your points.
Well, on your point, I couldn't believe, Drew, when they tell him that he's a year younger now. Why? That was such a weird, random thing to put in. It doesn't matter, right? So I'm not complaining because it doesn't matter. But, like, that's just something that causes that sets up the potential for something sloppy and silly in the future, right? Where, like, they forget how old the Flash is supposed to be because they needlessly changed what his age was in an episode randomly. Why do that? But beyond that, when they tell him that, Drew, and he goes, wait, you mean, and then they tell him that he's actually 29 now, I couldn't believe I was stunned when he didn't follow up. And he said, you mean I've leveled up? Because my God, as the show used that line ad nauseum this season. I was so ready for it, Drew. Like, I had already said it out loud myself when he was like, you mean I've leveled up? I shouted it out, and then he didn't say it. I was like, wait, what? The show resisted? Drew, I thought it, now, to be clear, it's a CW show, and The Flash has been particularly guilty of this of all of the shows. So I am prepared for melodrama, to be clear. So my bar for what I consider over the top is pretty high because, again, I'm going in expecting it. This episode was very melodramatic with Barry. I have to do what I can with the time that I have left. They're not killing Barry in this episode. What are we doing, Drew? Oh, my gosh. They were so straight-faced, serious. Barry, you're almost going to die, and this is the last moments that you have. I was like, what? This is a random throwaway episode. Nothing in this episode mattered long-term, right? It was a filler episode, and yet the show was with a straight face looking at us being like, Barry could die right here. It's like, what are we doing? It was just so, his scene, Drew, where he was aging, and I was like, this is so melodramatic. Why are we doing this? He's going to be fine. We all know he's going to be fine. They're not going to kill Barry in a random filler episode.
Yeah, exactly. Then we had that ending where Barry goes and just destroys Caitlin's apartment with all that stuff, I was like, I didn't feel like him.
So I agree, but also disagree, Drew. I agree that that's not what Barry should do based on most of the time what they show us that he's like. However, this show has had a propensity to make Barry kind of an a-hole, right? So I agree that theoretically on paper, that is not, Barry's not going to do something that openly antagonistic and just begging for Caitlin to do something in retribution, right? Theoretically, on paper, right. Barry wouldn't do that. However, in practice, I feel like Barry's done this more often than not, where he just does some... The man does not have great emotional intelligence on the show consistently, Drew. It makes sense when you think about it. He's now 29 for the second time, and he still hasn't learned a lot of, you know, basic life lessons that most people get as they're growing up. So in that regard, it makes sense, right? He probably never learned that you don't just destroy everything that a friend owns.
I can't see her forgiving him.
No, that's the thing. That's exactly the point, Drew. Like, that is so over-the-top antagonistic for him to do. I get him not letting her follow through on that. That makes sense, and it's probably the right choice, right? But not like that. That is, like you said, that is begging for her to not just not forgive him, but, I mean, retribution is going to be on the table now, right? Like, it's almost certainly.
Is she going to become a villain because of this? I don't see the show going that direction, but if it was in the comics or something, I could see them might be doing that. I don't know. I just thought it was just over the top. Now, the villain in this, I think he was from the comics, and I took a look, and I found out that Peter Olof was a Soviet biogenicist, and he debuted in The Flash, Volume 2, Number 7, in 1987. I do think that's when Wally was The Flash, if I remember right.
If the numbers are what I think they are on that, Drew, that would have been, like, very fresh in his run, right? Like, issue 5 in 87, that's got to be, like, right when he became The Flash.
Oh, it was issue number 7, so yeah.
Sorry, oh yeah, sorry. But still, right? Like, that's...
Yeah.
That's got to be right at the beginning of the run.
Yeah, so yeah. Before, I was reading comics, but, yeah, early in Wally's career, so...
That's interesting you look that up, Drew, because I remember as I was watching the episode, I was like, this feels like a character from the comics. And my guess, I didn't know who it was. My guess was that it was a version of a Silver Age character, because the plot felt kind of Silver Age-y to me, where like, oh, Barry gets aged into an old man. I guarantee you that happened in a Silver Age Flash comic at some point. So, yeah, That's cool. He's later than I would have thought. If you told me he was an old 60s character, I would have believed you 100%.
Yeah, I would have thought that too. All right, well, let's move on to our last episode for this week. Superman and Lois, Season 2, Episode 12, Lies That Bind. Clark tells Lana that after the accident, after he saved both Lana and Pete, he left Smallville to discover himself, to become Superman. When Clark comes back to Smallville, Lana was with Kyle, and Lana is obviously hurt by the truth and drives off. Jonathan is let back into school by the principal. His first day back, Nat, John, and Jordan skip school. Nat shows the boy she has built a suit similar to her dad's suit. Superman visits Bizarro John in his prison cell. Superman gives him a chance to redeem himself by helping him stop Allie. Bizarro John thinks Allie is a god, and there's no way to stop her. Clark brings Tal Rowe home to talk to Lois. Lois, John Henry, and Sam agree to Tal helping them reluctantly. Tal Rowe and Superman use their heat vision to try and destroy the pendant. Allie shows up to take the pendant back. Tal attacks Allie, but she is too powerful to stop. Superman and John Henry try to stop Allie before she gets back to the portal. Allie starts attacking Superman the same way she did Tal. John Henry uses his hammer to stop Allie. Superman retrieves the pendant, and the pendant is destroyed. Allie gathers up the pieces, and Tal escapes. Lois and Clark go to warn Lana about her doppelganger. Lana decides their two families need to stay away from each other for a while. Allie goes to see Bizarro Tal Rowe and steals his powers, killing him.
Drew, one thing I want to give this show credit. I do feel like Allie has, they've managed to make her seem much more menacing and threatening than I genuinely thought they could possibly do. I really was questioning early in the season how effective she could be as a villain to Superman, right? Or, and honestly, it's, you could put Supergirl in her place too. But they've really done it. She feels like a genuine menace, right? A huge threat to Superman. So that's, I want to give the show credit there. That is, they've been much more effective than I thought in that regard. I know I keep beating a dead horse with this, but I have to say, as good as they've done with her, I still don't understand why it had to be Bizarro World. That's just me. I feel like you could do this story without that, and I would argue it would be better if you didn't tie the two together. But other than that, Drew, it's the best CW show. I mean, it's one of the only ones left standing at this point, so that's not saying much, but... But it is good. Like, I don't dread watching this show. And I'm going to be honest, a lot of these ones I don't want to watch most of the time. This is not one of those shows. One thing I was a little pleasantly surprised by, Drew, is that we thought potentially last podcast that him telling Lana his secret identity was a precursor to telling everyone. And that seems like that's maybe not the case, that maybe it's just I'm sure Lana's family as a whole is going to figure it out by the end of the season. I have little doubt of that. But it seems like maybe that's it. And that would be a very pleasant surprise if they keep it at that.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. I'm hoping that's the case. I don't want him to give a secret identity up to the world. Letting Lana know the truth makes sense. But she's very hurt by that. And we saw her get mad at Lois. And I think one of the reasons she got mad at Lois is she's jealous that Lois ended up with Clark instead of her. I mean.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I think the show has done a very good job of showing without telling, right? We always talk about how, especially The Flash, has been extremely guilty of telling us stuff without ever actually showing that. And this is the exact opposite of that, where they've never explicitly stated that she's jealous of Lois, but she clearly is, right? And I think the show has done an excellent job, both from a writing standpoint, also then the actress herself and the way that she's played the role has been executed very well. Yeah, I agree with you, Drew. I think they've done a great job kind of showing that there's some, I mean, especially this episode, I thought the actress did a great job of communicating jealousy, regret too, right? Like a sense of like, oh, that could have been me. I could have been with Superman. That was some good stuff.
I agree with you. I think the show did a really good job of showing how Lana really feels. And one of the things she regrets is the fact that Clark told her he came back to Smallville. And he saw she was with Kyle, so he just left. And it looked like that, you know, Lana would have preferred Clark coming back. She probably would have left Kyle if Clark would have came back to her.
100%. I agree completely with you, Drew. I think that they made that, again, without directly saying it, they implied it very heavily, right? And I think she was trying to imply that to Clark. There's some, like I said, I thought the actress did just a fantastic job. I mean, again, jealousy and regret. I mean, she just, you could tell that she was, the hurt, I think, was, yes, technically she was hurt that she wasn't told the truth, but I think the real pain is the sense of missing out on what could have been. I think that's where the real pain is.
Yeah, and she's in a vulnerable place right now with her and Kyle split up, so.
Right, and that's the thing, right? So she knows not only, like, what a kick in the teeth that is, Drew. Not only does she clearly still likes just Clark Kent, the person, right? It seems fairly clear that she could have been with Clark. We're ignoring that he's Superman. She could have been with Clark, but she ends up with Kyle, and life is fine. But then all of a sudden, Kyle turns out to be a cheater, and life's not gone the way that she wanted. And then you find out on top of that, not only did she, in a sense, choose wrong, whether that was a real choice or not, okay. But not only that, but Clark was also Superman the whole time. Like, oh, Drew, that's just a kick in the teeth.
Yeah, it is.
Again, that's good writing, and that sort of nuance is just absent from the other CW shows. I can't think of anything that is close to that level of nuance.
I can't either. Superman is very trusting. We see him once again get his brother out. I knew it. As soon as he got the opportunity, he was gone. I think it would be really interesting to have a relationship between Clark and Talro, where they're actually being brothers and helping each other and stuff. You know, kind of like what we saw in the Bizarro World version of them. I don't think we're ever going to get that here in this version. I think he's always going to be the villain.
I don't know, Drew. I don't know if I agree with that. To be clear, you could be right. I wonder if the show is slowly building towards that. And I think the show does. The actor that plays Tal is pretty good, right? So they want to keep him on the show. But you kind of can't keep coming back to him as a villain. So what do you do to keep him interesting and keep him on the show? You turn him into an ally, right? And I agree. I don't know that they'll ever be a, you know, perfectly 100% getting along duo like the Bizarro version of the brothers. But I do think the show wants to get close to that. And I think, to me, Drew, and again, this is speculation on my part, so I could be wrong. I think this episode was a way for them to get closer to that by coming up with a semi-believable reason for him getting out of the prison, right? Because I think they want those two to be allies, but it never would really make sense for the army to agree to Tal just like, well, he's good now. Okay, we believe you, Superman, and let him go. Right? That probably never happens. So how do you have him escape without being a directly antagonistic escape that would lead to Superman needing to bring him back into custody? And I think it's this. I think this is the scene.
Okay. So do you think they'll bring him in when they need him, and then he'll be off wherever, hiding or whatever, whatnot?
Again, I don't know, Drew. I want to be clear. You could also be right. This is purely just what I'm thinking. I think the show wants him to become an ally. I don't think he'll ever be a perfect ally. I don't think he'll be John Henry, to be clear. You know, I think there'll always be a little bit of butting heads, but I also think that's what's kind of interesting about that relationship, is that it's not quite perfect, that they're not totally compatible, but they're trying, and they want to be. And Tal clearly, legitimately really does want a connection, right? I feel like they've done a pretty good job showing that he really does want a familial connection. So I don't think it'll ever be perfect, Drew, but I do think that we are moving slowly but surely towards him being on Clark's side.
Okay. I'm hoping that's the case, because I'd like to kind of see that.
I think the scene with him and Lois was genuine, Drew. And I mean, obviously, that could be wrong. I mean, he has clearly demonstrated that he can be, you know, manipulative and antagonistic before. So it wouldn't shock me if he was lying in that scene, but it felt genuine to me. I think he might not be perfect, and he might still have a propensity to do things that Clark doesn't like. But I really do think he genuinely wants a positive relationship with the only family he has left.
Yeah, and that makes sense. Now, I really liked Nat, John, and Jordan in this episode, you know, hanging out, getting along and stuff. But that was really stupid of Jonathan to skip the first day back to school. You would think the principal would be keeping a close eye on him.
You can guarantee they would be. Not even that I work in a school and can guarantee that that would happen, but even if I didn't, common sense, like you said, would suggest that they would. The boy was just, it was almost expelled and was instead severely suspended for an extended period of time. You think the school's not going to notice that he's gone? Come on, man.
So, I thought that was stupid. But I did like the little adventure we had with Nat, John, and Jordan. You know, just them working together. Of course, they could have done that after school or something, but that's beside the point. I just wanted to point out, I kind of like where their relationship is going and stuff. So I like them working together, and it's cool we got to see Nat build the suit you know, she basically has from the comics. I just enjoyed that. And I'm sure we're going to get to see her in the suit at some point. Well, she said she was giving it to Jonathan versus Bizarro Jonathan, since Natalie's giving him the suit.
I wonder, I still am convinced at some point Jonathan's going to get powers, Drew. And I could be wrong about that, but I thought that they might actually go through with the, like, merging thing with him to give a reason for why all of a sudden he had powers now, where you get this weird combo, Jonathan. I don't know. I agree with you. I think there will definitely be some sort of head-to-head between the two. It may not happen this season, Drew, but I am not convinced that Jonathan will remain unpowered for the entirety of the show.
Oh, I don't either. I expect him to get powers at some point, too. So, and I'm sure he's going to be more of a hero than Jordan is.
It'll be interesting to see. And maybe they don't, but I can't imagine that they resist the urge to do that. Also, it just, frankly, it's more interesting, in my opinion, if he has powers. Like, we've done two seasons of the jealousy angle. I don't need, another two seasons of that. I'm good.
Me too.
One thing I am curious to see, Drew, and part of this may not be the show's choice, depending on what happens with the sale of the network and what DC decides to do with their properties. But don't you feel like there's a little bit of a limited shelf life with this show? Because they're sophomores, I think, right now, because they started as freshmen last season. What did they do in two seasons? I feel like you kind of run into the problem that a lot of shows that feature teenagers runs into.
Yeah, the show always gets screwed up when college comes.
Yeah, and I wonder, does the show last that long? I'm not saying it shouldn't, to be clear. I like the show. Does it make it to that point, or does it end earlier so it doesn't even matter? What do they do? It's an interesting thing that's always been kind of in the back of my mind watching this show, is that the actors, A, they can't stay in for this. They can't even, like, magically extend senior year for an eternity. Be like, nope, still weirdly senior year. I know a ton has happened, but yeah, still seniors for the third straight season. Like, the actors are going to get too old at a certain point. So I wonder, I don't know. I mean, it's a question for another day, obviously, because the show's got to make it to that point, but it's also not that far away either.
Yeah, you're right. And it depends if they do slow down time a little bit. Maybe we can make sophomore year go on a little longer into the next season.
I think next season will be pretty illuminating in regards to potentially what they're planning to do, right? If next year is junior year, it's going to be kind of interesting, right? Because then that would be three seasons of them progressing time. And I feel like that would start to potentially put a timer on the show. So that'll be interesting. That'll be something that'll be really interesting to see what they do next season. I'm not gonna lie though, Drew. I'd be pretty surprised if they're not juniors next year, because I think the show is obsessed with showing football wrong, and they can't do that if it's not junior year.
All right. Well, that wraps up our episode for this week. Do you have a shout out, Cletus?
Yeah, so last podcast I mentioned I was able to start catching up on some comics. The comic I wanted to shout out this week is another Image book, Black Monday Murders, Volume 2. It is currently the most recent volume that's put out, but theoretically, according to the author, Brian Hickman, there's supposed to be four more issues. I don't know. Regardless, the series is really interesting. It sort of follows a detective investigating a very wealthy Wall Street person being murdered. And it sort of, kind of gets into some old, like, conspiracy stuff of, like, the uber rich and secret societies. But what if the uber rich are wealthy because they know magic, and maybe not good magic, but kind of connected to, dark magic and dark gods and things like that. And that's where all of the true wealth in the world comes from. Really interesting stuff, Drew. When I read the first volume, I enjoyed it because it does it really interesting, where you almost have like these case files, much very similar to Watchmen, where you have a lot of text kind of supporting the comic itself.
But I'll admit, I was a little bit lost after I read the first volume. And I finally got a chance to catch up on volume two of this. And I felt the story came together very well and became a lot more clear as to, at least in some regards, as to what's going on. And at least I have a better idea of what's happened up to this point in the story. And really good. If you like mystery, if you like magic, kind of involved in that too, it's really good. Quite violent. Definitely not for a younger reader. Just, I mean, I think you could imagine that based on the title, Black Monday Murders. But just to be clear, a very adult series, but really interesting. I recommend people check it out.
All right. And for my shout out, during our review of I Am Batman, in that issue, we saw them bring up the Black Dahlia murder. And I'm going to shout out about two podcasts that tell the story about that. First one is American Hauntings, which is one of my favorite podcasts to listen to. Season 5, Episode 13 and Episode 14, they do a two-part talking about the murder. It's interesting to hear that American Hauntings focuses on the history of it. Now, the other podcast I'm going to shout out is called True Crime Garage. And they have a three-part episodes on it. Episode 44, Episode 45, and Episode 46. And they kind of get into more of the details of the crime and investigation and stuff of it. And both the podcasts are really good. If you want to know more about the Black Dahlia murder, and it's unsolved to this day, and it happened back in 1946. But it's a very, very famous true crime story that's unsolved, and a lot of interesting details and mystery to it. So I suggest checking both of those out. And I'll have those in the show notes. All right. If you'd like to comment on anything we've talked about this week, you can reach us at our feedback line, 317-564-9133. Leave us a message, or you can email us at earthstationdcu@gmail.com. All right, Cletus, coming up next time, we've got Batman, Superman, World's Finest, Batman, The Knight, Catwoman, Nightwing, The Flash, Shadow War Zone, and of course, our DC television shows, The Flash and Superman and Lois. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
Time to go.
You sure this is necessary?
The Guardians of the Universe seem to think so.
How long will you be gone? But we will be back, little brother.
I wish I could go with.
I doubt your mother would approve.
I'll miss you.
Perhaps you could water the plants in my apartment while I am gone.
Be careful, all right?
May the gods be with you all.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping for the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.